Hi, this is Neil Funk, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nick Friedel, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to an exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye. We have the great Keith Franz on, and the legendary, my original partner, Mark Lewenthal, is back for an exciting tour de force. How you doing, brother?
What's going on, man? Long time. How are you?
I'm doing good. As everyone remembers, Mark left for Milwaukee, totally basically checked out of the beloved Bull, but he's back full-time now after, congratulations on getting your master's degree.
I didn't check out, but I didn't have cable for two seasons, which was a problem. But Fred, today, I just got installed my new Xfinity package, and it comes just on the heels of Markkanen and Zach LaVine having that great game two games ago.
Oh, he's back.
I'm ready to go.
Awesome to hear. And Keith, it's always great to talk to you, brother. So we got the three here. We were hopefully going to have Romina, a legendary figure on Bulls Twitter. She stood us up tonight, unfortunately. So it's just us three. The three Bulls, but we'll be able to move forward as such. So let's start out with you, Keith, with this one. The team's been playing much better as of late. No doubt about it. Just an incredible game. I think the highlight of the season against the Celtics. You know, we lost, obviously, on Monday against Milwaukee with missing several guys. But overall, this team has been a tour de force lately. What say you? What are the two biggest reasons, in your opinion, that the team's been playing so well?
I think just overall for a team that is a seller going into the trade deadline, that there's a lot of tension in the locker room, and just having that weight lifted off of the team in general allows them to focus on their jobs. They know who their teammates are going to be for the rest of the season, and the fact that the Bulls decided to make a positive addition in efforts towards winning and being more competitive the remainder of the season by adding Otto Porter Jr., who in the games that he's played has fit seamlessly between Lowry and LaVine, and I think he enhances both of their games and kind of protects them on the defensive end.
Mark, what say you? What do you think? What are the big reasons for this turnaround?
Well, I think part of it is that we've had a bad schedule. I mean, the Boston win was an impressive win, but the two wins before that, I mean, whatever. But it's Lowry, Markkanen, and Zach LaVine and how amazing that they're playing, and then also I feel the addition of Otto Porter, but really, you're starting to see a lot of consistency from Lowry marketing, and it's changed everything. Because this team overall, once you get past those guys and Robin Lopez, this is like the worst basketball team in the history of the world. I mean, like four through 16 is just awful. I was watching just like a couple weeks ago. Who is the dude right now that he's even number seven? I was watching yesterday for the first time in like
both Timmy
history.
Lulu.
I was like, who is this guy?
Timmy Lulu Caratop. Yeah, he's the guy they got from Oklahoma City. Exactly.
And he started in the last game. So it's like, I mean, this team's terrible, yet they've been competitive and then winning, you know, three games into the last game just because of LaVine and Markkanen and obviously the addition of Otto Porter. And I think that they would have been competitive in the last game if it wasn't for the fact that they had to put in the bench at some point in the game.
Keith, any response?
I mean, I think the bench is obviously the sore thumb in this equation for the Bulls. I'm still on the part of the team that feels that some of that was intentional to get the result that we've resulted with in another good lottery pick. But no, yeah, it's going to be hard to win with this bench unless Zach and Lowry are going to put up 70-plus points combined together a night.
You just bring in a point guard. All you got to do is sign either Rubio or Beverly to challenge Dunn, open up the competition at the point guard position in the preseason, and whoever loses is going to lead one of the best backup units in all of basketball. When you consider you're going to have Valentine on that unit, you're going to have Hutch on that unit's going to be immeasurably better. And I want him to see him bring back either Taj or Lopez. I don't care, either one, to kind of be the backup, you know, 4 or 5. And then whoever that draft pick is going to be is probably going to be coming off the bench because the starter's already set, depending, again, on who we sign as a free agent. Or if we draft Morant, both those guys, you know, kind of compete for the starting point guard position. I still, you know, everybody is off the Dunn island. I've got 1 foot in the boat, 1 foot on the island. I still believe the kid can grow into be a starting quality point guard. I've seen improvement during great swaths of this year. I've also been disheartened lately, especially with his play as of late. And I do kind of find it kind of questionable that he's got a migraine and just seemed to be a coincidence that he you know, didn't play at all in the fourth quarter against Boston. But regardless, you know, things aren't going well with him. But I still believe in him. He's got a measurable amount of talent. He's a great defensive player. And regardless, if he loses the battle in camp, he's going to lead, will be one of the best backup point guards in the league. What say you, Mark? We'll start with you and then go back to Keith.
I mean, I don't have the same optimism as you as far as Chris Dunn goes, but it doesn't really matter to me because I feel like at the moment you're seeing right now that you've got the pieces, I think, to be a pretty competitive team in the very near future. And Fred, I know you were saying, I think 1 year, you were saying it was going to be a 1 year thing, but I think by like next year being the year that we finally make the playoffs. So I think this year you said that we'd win the championship as well, potentially.
No, I didn't.
Which wasn't
you got
the
it
case,
all wrong. Go on.
I could see us being a playoff team, and if you put the right pieces around LaVine and Markkanen by next year being a maybe even you know pretty competitive team. But yeah, I don't think that Chris Dunn is going to be the point guard of the future. I don't know exactly which a lot's going to depend on what kind of draft pick we get in terms of what I think we should do in the offseason, because at the kind of like we're doing right now, it's like you let the players grow that are the core of the team, but are we at a point yet where we really want to put competitive role players in there to make this team take that next step? Because I think unless Lowry and Zach really are consistently the players that we're starting to see them maybe be, if you put those pieces on this team, this could be a potentially just a 40-win, 42-win team that's, you know, not really going anywhere. So I think maybe we still have to see exactly what we get. What kind of draft pick do we get? What's the team looking like in this offseason before I'm going to commit to saying that I really want to put anyone of any value at these major positions that we have? But if we're going to get anyone, Derrick Rose. That's what I feel.
This will be an interesting topic. Keith, what say you?
I think Dunn's getting a bit of a harsh rap here. I think it is becoming more evident that him and Zach are never really going to coexist on the offensive end. They're both two ball-dominant of players, and Chris Dunn isn't a good catch-and-shoot player from the perimeter. So when you have him standing in a corner, it just really doesn't benefit the team. And Zach LaVine should have the ball in his hands more time than not. So I think in addressing the point guard, in the offseason, the Bulls need to look into somebody who is both good on ball and off ball and can be a spacer. That's why Ryan Arcidiacono has had more success with LaVine and Chris Dunn without the two of them together. When Zach was injured, Dunn and Archie as starters went 3-for-3. And the narrative was this team will never win with Zach LaVine because he can't play defense and he just puts up empty stats. And now we're seeing LaVine and Archie have success, and now it's Dunn's fault. So it's typical Bulls Nation. I do think Dunn's future may be as the sixth man or the reserve point guard on this team, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I think if Chris Dunn is your reserve point guard playing starter minutes, that you have some depth on your team. So I don't think that that's as much of a problem as it's being made out to be. I do think a lot of Chris Dunn's problems come from a lot of the pressure that's being put on him right now. You constantly hear about Pax and Gar scouting Moran, and the Bulls are getting rid of a point guard, and Dunn's the only one that's actually been singled out as we don't know if he's here for the future. So
he's
coming into work every day, and he doesn't know what's going on.
But he's a 24-year-old player, and I think when you look at a guy like Zach LaVine, who's a year younger than he is, you see him producing, and you see, I think by 24, typically, you see guys that have some potential of being pretty good, showing those sorts of flashes, and I feel with Chris Dunn, the flash, like, you get a flash, like, a sprinkle every now and again. He has a lot of bad games consecutively. He turns over the ball a ton. For a point guard that can't shoot the ball, he turns over the ball like 2.5 times a game. He's not good enough to be able to get the clearance to turn over the ball as much as like a James Harden. I don't see players typically that cannot shoot learn how to eventually shoot, especially by the age of 24. I mean, he's a pretty dismal offensive player.
He's gotten better every year, though, Mark. Slightly better shooting it to the point. His percentages have gone up every year. I agree he's not, you know, even good, I would even qualify him. He's fair at best at shooting the ball. But I do see improvements with him. I have been until recently. His play of late has been just awful. But for the most part of this, for a large part of this year, I thought he was getting better on that end. I've just been, you know, no doubt about it. Maybe you're right. Maybe he maxes out as a sixth man. I don't think he should let him go, though. I don't believe in trading him no matter what. I don't care who you – if you draft Morant, you have those two battle out in camp. And then you maybe look at spending your free agent resources somewhere else. I do want to go back to what you said before about Rose. Here's why I love Derrick Rose. I love everything about him. I think it'd be a great story. I was talking about the story of bringing him back before it was in vogue to do that, earlier before the season. My issue is with Derrick Rose is he's not a great defensive player. When you have Zach LaVine as your other backcourt mate, that is a recipe for disaster. I think you do have to have kind of at least an average to plus point guard defender, which Dunn is. That's where he does fit with LaVine, is on the defensive end, because he can take those really good twos that would be problematic for LaVine. And Rose is not that guy. Like, I think that would not be a great fit, LaVine and Rose, unless maybe possibly if you had a clear-cut starter, if you did get rid of Dunn, and you did decide to get rid of Dunn, and you did decide to maybe bring in a veteran, then I guess you could possibly bring in Rose to be like that spark plug off the bench. But
maybe you could do it with Dunn, though, kind of how he's been used with Jeff Teague, where like Rose is getting the bulk of the minutes, but he's not starting with the first unit. Maybe you could do something like that even with Dunn. As long as Dunn's minutes are somewhat limited, then I'm okay with him starting if you've had, you know, a spark plug coming off the bench potentially.
Yeah, he's just not reacting well, I think, to the reduction in minutes. He's clearly, you know, it's a contract year basically for him this year. He'll probably go into his restricted free agency. Was he a restricted free agent? It's not this season, the following season, right? So he's eligible for the extension this offseason, right, Keith? Is that right?
That is correct. So up for the extension this offseason, he will be a restricted free agent the next offseason.
And he's played his way into, he's not going to get anything worthwhile from the Bulls. I mean, I wouldn't even offer him, what, $6, $7 million? Maybe you could get him for $6 or $7 million for a couple of years. I would probably sign that because I do still believe in his talent level. But I think probably the best move for the Bulls to make, don't even think about who they're going to draft. Bring in Beverly, bring in or Rubio, have them battle it out with Dunn, and then draft the best player available wherever that may be, and then go from there. And then you're set. I mean, just having these guys healthy next year, having Hutch, Valentine, and whoever that point guard is,
Wendell,
on the second unit. Well, Wendell will be starting, right? So, and maybe I would sign like a Taj Gibson to back up those two. You got Wendell at the five. You got Laurie at the four. Porter Jr. at the three, LaVine at the two, and this free agent or Dunn, whoever wins the battle in camp, as a starting point guard. And on the second unit, you're going to have Valentine Hutchinson, who I really like. It's going to be awesome, man. It's going to be awesome. That is absolutely a playoff team. I always say seven seed, but I think it'd actually be higher than that if some of these teams fall off, which I expect they will.
I think it all comes down to Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine to a lesser extent, but I think it comes down to Lauri Markkanen. I was having an argument today with somebody that I work with who was saying that what the Bulls don't have is a face to the team. And I disagreed, and I'm starting to take this stance finally, that I'm starting to see that we might have the face to a team with Lauri Markkanen. I mean, it doesn't. At the end of the day, what matters is the progression that we've seen out of him in the last couple weeks here is starting to become pretty extraordinary. If he can continue to get better, if he can be a guy that's averaging in the high 20s per game, if this is the type of guy that maybe by next season could be beginning of a perennial All-Star, then everything's going to work out regardless of what we do in the offseason. But if, you know, it's all about that, if he does or if he doesn't. I mean, are you guys convinced that Lauri Markkanen at the moment is the future of this franchise and can be successful at being that?
Keith, I'll let you answer that first, and then I'll take it.
I mean, I think I've been there since almost the first time I watched him play in Finland after we drafted him. You could just see that he was a very fluid athlete for a seven-footer. He had all the skills of a shooting guard at his size, and it's coming through, and it's coming through in a season in which he came off an elbow injury and he lost the majority of the 17 pounds of muscle that he put on in the offseason. So I don't know how you couldn't see him as the face of this franchise going forward.
So I had this post. I posted a poll the other day, which is, what is more likely to happen? That Lauri Markkanen becomes a top 10 player in the NBA, or the Bulls win the lottery? At best, they all have a 14% chance if they fall further, but it's going to be somewhere probably between 10 and 14%. And then Zion develops into a top 10 player. What's more likely? To me, it's unequivocally the former, that Lauri Markkanen develops into a top 10 player. I think he's well on his way there. Over the last seven games, I think he's averaging like a 20-10, over 20-10, like 25-12, some insane amount. Those numbers are absolutely top 10 numbers to produce like that. And I think what makes him different than anyone else almost in the top 20, if you look at NBA players, is his shooting ceiling to me is elite. I think he can become almost a Curry, maybe not as good as Curry. I mean, Curry's a all-time historic great shooter, but approaching that, and without a doubt, the best big shooter in the NBA. And when you have that skill, everything else is gravy because they got to guard you 35 feet out.
And he's showing to be a lot more than just a shooter, though. Absolutely. What's really impressed me, especially over like the last 2 weeks, has been ability to put the ball on the floor and get to the basket and being able to use his length around the basket. He's starting to really learn that. And I think he's still a little bit crusty at it, I feel, and he still does some like dumb stuff, like young people stuff from time to time. And I think that over the next season, as you were mentioning, Keith, he puts the muscle back on. Next season, as long as once he starts to refine that aspect of his game, he could be so much more than a shooter, because Steph Curry, just with his size, he has to be just a shooter. I think, Markkanen, you're going to see a much more versatile player.
Keith, what do you think?
I think Lowry has the versatility to play 3 through 5. As you can see in transition, as we saw a couple times specifically last night, his playmaking skills are better than most people expect as well. I think we see Lowry play some point forward in the future because your best player generally has the ball in their hands. So I think the sky's the limit for Lowry. I really don't think there's much that he can't do. We've seen defensive improvements. I think his biggest weakness is his post offense, and that probably comes with strength, and we'll see if he can put that back on this summer.
I've been just so impressed with him. I mean, I expected this, though. I've always been high on him. I've always said I think he's had top 10 ability. The guy who's really impressed me, just as much as Markin, has been LaVine. Like, I was having my doubts earlier, and Keith, you're aware of that. I mean, we've talked about it quite a while. I didn't like what happened with the, you know, him leading the charge of potentially skipping practice. All of a sudden, you know, especially since Porter came, he's starting to facilitate, and I love it when he actually, except when he goes a little bit overboard trying to get a triple-double, but for the most part, when he actually actively tries to move the ball, just so impressive, and I love what I'm seeing from Zach LaVine. And to see those two kind of finally gel and actually learn how to play together and really become, you know, 1A, 1B, or a dynamic duo is so exciting and so heartening for what's in the future, because I think Wendell Carter Jr. just seamlessly steps in there and grows with them, and his game really fits in well with what they both do well and what their you know, lack of strength is, or what their weaknesses are, and very minor in Laurie's case. I think Wendell covers up a lot of what they don't do well.
Let's say coming into the off season, let's say we even catch up to Atlanta and get somewhere around like a fifth pick or something like that. Do you think that we have the core on this team right now where we could be a potential Eastern Conference contender with what we have, and then adding on top of that?
Absolutely. I've said, regardless of who we draft in this draft, this team, the core of this team, I think could be an Eastern Conference challenge, potentially an NBA challenger for a title in 3 years. And it's all dependent on how well Markkanen. If Markkanen becomes a top 10 player, then you have what you need to become a champion. You have an elite player, top 10, who's going to potentially lead you to a title. So, yeah, I think the answer is unequivocally yes. So whatever we get in this draft is gravy. I expected this team to be significantly better, and all the insane amount of injuries has obviously put us back. And in the long run, it'll probably be the best thing that could have happened to us. Keith?
I'm going to run through a quick list here of pieces that playoff teams in the East could lose in the offseason. The Bucks have Middleton on an early termination option, so he's a free agent. Brogdon is a restricted free agent. Bledsoe is an unrestricted free agent. Brook Lopez is an unrestricted free agent. Nikola Mirotic is an unrestricted free agent. So half of their playoff rotation is in question to return next year. For the Raptors, you have Kawhi Leonard, who has an early termination option. Danny Green, who's an unrestricted free agent. The Pacers could lose Darren Collison, Tyreke Evans, Thaddeus Young, Bojan Bogdanovic, and Corey Joseph in unrestricted free agency. The 76ers have to retain Butler, Redick, and Tobias Harris. Celtics could be losing Kyrie. Terry Rozier is a restricted free agent. Morris is an unrestricted free agent. The Heat are just even going to touch that.
Yeah.
They wish they were losing people, but they're only losing Ellington and Wade to retirement. So you go through this list, and the Hornets, Kemba Walker, Jeremy Lamb are both unrestricted free agents. Most of the playoff teams in the East are going to lose at least one good piece in free agency this year, and they're not going to add as good of a draft pick as the Bulls. Some of them don't have as much talent as the Bulls have accumulated already. So I don't know how you can't say that the path for the Bulls to being a contender in the East isn't in the very near future.
All great points. All great points, Keith. Mark, you don't agree? What do you think?
I think I do agree. And I mean, now that I'm starting to see, because with Lowry going into this season, I thought that he was showing that he was mostly a shooter. When he first came back, I didn't see the aggressiveness in postgame. And I get that he was coming back from an injury, but it's just still, like at that point, it took time. We just didn't see it. I'm starting to see what I think could be greatness. And I do think, Fred, that we need more than a top 10 player. I mean, I don't think you see teams really contending with a player that's at closer to that 10 level. I think you're talking typically, I mean, look, like the best players in the East right now, Kawhi and Giannis, are, you know, top 5 players. I think he needs to be more like that, I think, for this particular nucleus, the way that it is,
Boston,
to be...
Yeah. Boston
ultimately successful, but I'm just thrilled, guys, because it's been one season of this rebuild, and us on this show are talking contender. I don't think most of the city is talking that this team could be in that position yet. I don't think the city's bought on yet, but the fact that we're even talking about this in one off season, I think, hey, job well done.
Well, you both know I'm a Bulls prophet, and tonight I had some visions, and I want to get your opinion on these visions. And we'll start with you, Mark, first. We'll go to Keith, and then vice versa. I don't know if you guys saw this on Twitter, but did you see these, Keith? You might be prepared for them. Mark, you probably haven't. So here we go. You ready? Here's my first vision I had. Number one, Kawhi Leonard will leave Toronto for the Clippers this summer, initiating a full rebuild in Toronto. They will finish below the Bulls in 2019 and 20. I'd like to hear from both of you guys. Do you think that's more likely or less likely to be true? We'll start out with you, Mark.
I think it's really hard to leave what they got in Toronto. I was watching them tonight against Boston, and I mean, they're just a really good basketball team, and Kawhi Leonard's getting all the credit for this resurgence that they're having. I mean, look, my gut tells me, I hate to say it, but after seeing, especially, you know, LeBron going to a team of nobodies, I think that at the end of the day, it didn't seem like he wanted to go to Toronto in the first place. He hasn't said anything. My gut says that he might still leave, but it's like, how can you leave? How can you leave this situation? You're not going to find a better situation.
Yeah, they're not going to win a title, though. That's how he's going to leave.
They have a chance. I mean, they have a chance of making it to the finals.
Yeah, so do I, but they're not beating Golden State. I like them a lot. I think they'll probably come out of the East, but they're not beating Golden State. And he loves Southern California. He's going to be in California next year playing for the Clippers. What say you, Keith?
Yeah, I think he's going to the Clippers unless they win a championship. All the Raptors' moves indicate that they're going for it this year. Hell, they had Kyle Lowry on the trade block at the trade deadline trying to get Mike Conley. So they're going for it all this year, and I don't think Marcus Gasol is going to maintain, you know, a star status. His contract isn't the greatest next year. I believe it's a player option. Whether he picks it up and they have to eat that contract or they renegotiate something long term is to be seen, but I don't think anything that they've done suggests that they're ultimately confident that Kawhi is staying long term.
Yeah, Mark,
yeah, you're probably right.
At worst, I love to say it because my bigger point is everybody's laughing, you know, with these visions, but I heard Kendall Gill say it. He thinks the Bulls could be top 5 next year. And I tell you, if they lose, Toronto loses Kawhi Leonard, that absolutely the Bulls will be competing. I think they'll finish ahead of Toronto. Number two vision. After a disappointing playoff exit in the first or second round, I haven't yet been able to see, as I look out in the horizon yet, where that will be. But they will be out by the second round. Irving will depart for the Knicks, leaving Boston with a rapidly declining Horford and Hayward, causing Ainge to complain that there are no more Russian oligarch NBA owners to disguise his incompetence. What say you? Likely to happen? Not likely to happen? Let's start out with you, Keith, on this one.
I think Kyrie is leaving to either play with Jimmy Butler or Kevin Durant somewhere, whether that's Brooklyn, who will have two max spots. If maybe he even goes to the Clippers and joins Kawhi and tries to take down LeBron, even though they had their kumbaya. But yeah, I don't think that the Celtics pieces are fitting together unless they trade, you know, for AD. Maybe that convinces Kyrie to stay. Maybe that falls through because Kyrie doesn't want to stay. So Boston could be in a pretty interesting predicament, and that isn't going to look good for Ainge with that chest that he had.
I love it. Mark, what say you?
Yeah, what a crazy turn of events. I mean, going into the season thinking that they were like clear-cut, hands-down favorites to win the East and being right now fifth and, you know, 9.5 games back, if this continues, I don't see why he would stay because they're clearly not that great of a basketball team. I think that typically comes down to wins and losses. Unless Boston does something crazy in the playoffs, which certainly, especially after tonight's loss, it doesn't look like they're that close to doing so. I think he's probably going to leave in the offseason. Whether it's to the Knicks, everybody always says everybody's going to the Knicks. As far as I can remember throughout my lifetime, other than maybe like Melo, I can't think of them ever getting a top-tier free agent.
They traded for him. That wasn't a signing. That was
They traded for him. You're right. They traded for him. So I can't think of them ever getting anybody big. But every single offseason, everybody's
going
to the
Knicks. Well, they got Stoudemire in 2010.
I don't see the Knicks, but I see him leaving.
They got Stoudemire in 2010, who was in the exact same tier as Boozer was.
Fourth.
Yeah. So I mean.
Yeah, but not in the top tier. He was like a fourth, fifth best free agent.
Well, my bigger point is here: Boston losing Irving brings them down, and they're already a fifth seed. The fact is, right now, if the season ended today, they'd be playing the 76ers in the first round. I like the 76ers in that series. It is possible the Boston Celtics could be out in round one. And you mean to tell me that Irving's going to re-sign there, a four-year deal? I don't see it. He's going to be on the Knicks, and he's going to join with Jimmy Butler. So my next, I haven't been able to write out my other visions yet. But my last vision.
I still want to say, Fred, though, that despite if any of these things even don't occur, if the teams stay the same that they stay right now, I think the Bulls have a chance next year. They don't need all these pieces of teams just imploding to fall into place for that potentially to happen. And I kind of hope it doesn't happen because I don't want to see the East just be this awful cesspool of filth that like it was in the early 2000s.
Why?
You know, just because
that's what exactly what I want to see.
Like when we made it in 2004, I mean, the East was terrible in 2004, and our success was kind of just despite the fact that the East stunk. I don't really want to see necessarily that either, personally.
Oh, I do. I want to see the East just be a tire fire and we'll lay waste to it for the next 10 years, which is entirely possible. The reason I'm going into this is because everybody is just, woe is me, the Bulls suck. If you step back and look at what is on the horizon, these are very bright skies. Vision 3. Due to George Hill and Tony Snell making just short of $30 million next season and Middleton's inevitable max contract, the Bucks will fall short of creating a champion around Giannis, and whispers of his departure in 2021 will begin in earnest next season. Now, I was somewhat wrong in that George Hill has a team option that with a $2 million buyout, so it won't be $30 million, it'll be $20 million. Or somewhere around. It'll be 13, somewhere around that. Regardless, if you look at their contract situation, they have a ton of free agents. They're going to lose some good players. And I think they're going to be forced into signing Middleton at a max deal. And Middleton is exactly like Lou Aldang. He's a nice player. He's not a max guy. But they're going to have to sign him to a max deal. Problems. I don't think Milwaukee, I think Milwaukee's going to be just like the Atlanta Hawks were. You know, very good in the regular season and disappointing departures in the playoffs. What say you? We'll start out with you in this one, Keith.
Yeah, I think that Middleton's sword is a double-edged one. If you let him go, you let Giannis's best complimentary player, who just became an all-star, walk. If you sign him, you're going to commit to 3+ years of close to, you know, $25+ million for a player who's kind of in the second or third tier of star players. He's like Otto Porter Jr. He's a junior star. He's not a star. He's a junior star. So I think Milwaukee has an interesting path too, because they're probably going to lose Brogdon, who's big in their grand scheme of things.
Yeah. What do you say, Mark?
Yeah, they're in a tough place. I mean, as we've seen historically, people don't want to play in Milwaukee, and they have to keep this together as best as they can for this all to work. And this, to me, kind of looks like just like one of those dream seasons. They're having a wonderful season. Everything looks great. But when the realities of the fact hit that they are still Milwaukee, it is what it is. I mean, history speaks. So I think you will be talking about Giannis potentially going somewhere else, because unless if they don't show improvement next season, then you're already going to be saying it. Even if they're just as good as they were, you know, a little bit worse, it's going to be they're going to become one of those, like, if they say they don't make the Eastern Conference Finals or make it out of the Eastern Conference Finals this year, it's like, well, they're good, but they're never going to be good enough to beat X, Y, or Z or Golden State or whatever it is. So, I mean, I see this being a dream season. I don't see it getting any better than this. And then to that, yes, I think he'll eventually go.
Brogdon makes $1.5 million this year. He's going to get a massive raise, whether it's in Milwaukee or somewhere else. That Tony Snell making 11.3 next season is just going to kill him. You know, because Ersova's making $7 million next year. He's under contract. And they got a bunch of guys making, you know, low amounts of money.
He's not up next year, though. He's only in his second year, right?
Who? Brogdon?
Brogdon?
No, he's an unrestricted free agent next year.
He's a restricted free agent.
Restricted, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. Which means but somebody's going to probably sign him.
Somebody's going to toss him an offer sheet that they're going to have to match, similar to
Middleton.
Yeah, they'll map, but how much tax is Milwaukee willing to pay? They just built a new stadium. They're going to have to bite one bullet. I don't know if they can bite both bullets when it comes to Brogdon and Middleton.
Key players on that team. Bledsoe is going to be an unrestricted free agent. Nico, who's probably going to do well for them, unrestricted free agent. Brooke Lopez, been huge for them, unrestricted free agent. He's only making 3.3. He's going to make significantly more based on how well he shot the three. That team is going to look very different next year and have nowhere near the depth that they do right now. So, again, another team on their way, you know, this is their max year. I still think out of all the teams, I like Toronto the best. Toronto and Philly, to me, are the two best teams. But I think next year, Philly, I think Butler's going to leave Philadelphia for New York. I think Butler, and this is my last vision that I didn't tweet, I think Butler and Kyrie Irving will join forces in New York and start a four-year partnership that will end, that will max out with probably about 44 wins and overall be looked at as a disappointing combination where they just blame the young guys for all their faults and never get past the second round. That's what I fully expect to see with the New York Knicks and Butler and Kyrie Irving next year. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, if that occurs, if Butler and Kyrie Irving join up forces in New York, I agree with you. I don't see the future being so bright, I see them maybe maxing out like somewhere in the range of like the early 40s, if that is the case. I think Jimmy Butler's reputation right now is kind of tarnished in the league. I mean, obviously, for the things that have occurred in the last few seasons, and I think the Knicks right here are on the hook because they just traded Kristaps Porzingis for just the possibility of getting a free agent this offseason. They have to make a splash. And I got to say, if they get Jimmy Butler, did they win? Is losing Kristaps Porzingis, even despite the ACL injury, because I know, look, you see players like Derrick Rose that don't come back from it, but then you see players like Zach LaVine who end up being amazing from it. I wouldn't have taken the risk of losing Kristaps Porzingis for the possibility of getting a guy like Jimmy Butler.
I agree.
Even if you get those two guys, who else do they really have around them? If I was going to take a situation, our situation versus like what the Knicks have right now, it's not even a question.
Well, if they get Irving and Durant, it was worth it. If they get Irving and Butler, which I think is likely, they'll be better. Absolutely, they'll be better. But I think they'll max out as a mid-40s team, which is significantly better than they have been. But I think it's going to end. It won't end well. I don't think the players that they have around them. Dennis Smith Jr. I mean, they don't have enough good players around them, and I don't think people will be running to play with those two guys. I could be wrong on that. What do you think, Keith?
I think for the Knicks, it's KD or bust. Obviously, getting Kyrie by association of Butler wouldn't be a horrible thing. Kyrie, when healthy, is a top guard in the NBA. We do have to factor in they are likely to have a 14% chance at Zion. If they land him, maybe they trade for AD. Maybe they keep Zion to keep, you know, the cap flexibility of having that young, controlled superstar on a rookie contract. So the Knicks do have a good situation, but it all depends on luck and free agency, and those things are not controllable things. KD could very well want to go to the Knicks with Kyrie right now, but then he wins a three-peat with Stephen Clay, and they're like, dude, why would you want to leave this?
Agreed.
Let's go for five in a row.
That's what I keep on coming back to, is that'll be three in a row, right?
Yep, it'll be three in a
row. If they win three in a row, none of the great teams have won four in a row. That's the one thing the Bulls didn't do. You know, I can't think of one team that's won four in a row outside of the Celtics. I don't even know if the Celtics did it in the 60s and 70s. They probably did. But, you know, no modern NBA team's won four titles in a row. He's going to walk away from that? I mean, that's your chance to really put your stamp on NBA history with four titles in a row and go for it. Why wouldn't you just sign another one-year deal? That's, to me, that seems like the most likely scenario. I could be wrong.
Especially if you can win four finals MVP in a row, too. And he tried to give last year's to Steph. You could, like, see the concerted effort that he was trying to get Steph the ball to finish it off, and he still ended up getting MVP. So, I don't know. You get the third one this year with the MVP and then a fourth one in a row and a fourth MVP in a row. I don't know how you could really dispute that. He'd have more rings and finals MVPs than LeBron in a row.
Yeah, I mean, look at Denver. Yeah. Go ahead, Mark.
I was just going to say, and I do agree with you as far as the Knicks go. I think it is KD or bust. I mean, there's nothing that they can do short of getting KD that was worth the risk of getting rid of Kristaps Porzingis. It's KD or bust, which is too much of a risk.
But, you know, let's say they do get him and Irving. You still have the problem of surrounding those guys with really good players. You got Dennis Smith Jr. and nothing else, really. I mean, well, you got Knox. I mean, you have some good young players. That's a problematic team. No doubt about it. You get Durant, Irving. Those are, you know, high end players. But Irving's got injury issues, and I think that's not going to get better as he ages. You know, Durant's what, going to be 30. He'll still have a number of good years left. No doubt about it. They're going to be a good team. But looking at the Bulls with LaVine and Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. and whoever this draft pick is, I mean, that young core has the potential to be very, very good for a very long time. I don't think there's any team better set up than the beloved Bull for the next 10 years. Do you guys agree?
Any team set up better than us for the next 10 years?
In the East. Who's better? Do you like Boston? Because I don't. You got $60 million for the next 2 years going to Hayward and Horford. Are those guys on the upside of their career? They're both on the downside of their career, and they're both a disaster. I mean, maybe in 2021 they'll have some space, but by then they're going to have to pay Tatum. You know, if they're able to keep
Irving.
Well, I mean,
there's other teams in the East that obviously have the chance of getting a very good draft pick this offseason. I don't know, you know, everybody's situation in terms of contracts. And, you know, look, we watch Lauri Markkanen play every single day. I think it's easy over these last few games to get a little bit excited. But in terms of, like, look, I mean, this isn't like the shoe-in that we thought Boston was in a couple years ago. I feel where, like, and everybody thought this, and now you're seeing it with Boston, and it looks like Boston, their ceiling might have already have been hit in terms of how good they could be. There's a lot of things that have to work out here for us to be an amazing team of the future. I like the light, but to think that we are, I don't think the rest of the world is looking at us and thinking, hey, it is great to be a Bulls fan right now. Look at their future.
Because they don't have a
lot of
vision.
Things still have to work out.
Well, who's got a better future than the Bulls? Keith. Atlanta has some very nice young pieces, right? You know, I like a lot of the young guys that they have. But who else? Orlando, maybe, to a certain degree. I still like the Bulls' young players better.
No, I wouldn't even throw Orlando in there. I think the Hawks, since they have two lottery picks this year, and they have John Collins, Trae Young, Torian Prince, Kevin Huerter, nice yeah. Amari Spellman. I think they have a very good young core being built. But outside of the Hawks in the East, I really don't think maybe the Hawks or the Knicks, if they get KD or they land Zion and, you know, all those lucky things fall into place for them, then, yeah, obviously the Knicks are going to be a problem. But KD's more of a short-term, probably 3-4 year max thing, if you think about it. Look at what we're going through with LeBron right now. So,
Nets would be another team, too, with some good young players. But they don't, you know, D'Angelo Russell, what's his ceiling? Is it as high as Lauri Markkanen's? I don't think so. He's a nice
probably
player.
Right.
What's that?
Well,
you might be right, yeah.
And the Nets have to sign him this offseason. He's likely to get a max offer from somewhere. So they're supposed to have two slots, but really they only have one slot if they retain D'Lo. Obviously, if they get Kyrie and Jimmy that want to go there, maybe they let him go. So there's a lot of kind of question marks around the East. The West has a lot of teams like the Grizzlies that are coming down, the Spurs. kind of have some young pieces. We don't know how long Pop's going to coach. There's a lot of change going on in the NBA, and the Bulls are going to be on the upswing when most people are on the downswing.
Amen. Mark, anything final thoughts before we head out into the sunset?
I mean, I hate to say it. It's just so, like, I mean, you guys are definitely convincing me a little bit. And a couple weeks ago, Fred, I don't think you'd have convinced me with the Kool-Aid that you're throwing down. I mean, this season's been a disaster. And for a season that has been this much of a disaster, to have optimism like this is kind of incredible. But you guys are kind of getting me on board. I mean, I was feeling it. I was feeling some warm and fuzzies. But I'm still, like, a little hesitant. I don't want my heart to be broken. Look, 2011... it kind of destroyed me as a Bulls fan. It's like a bad breakup. So it's like, I don't want to get too attached quite yet, but I'm starting to feel very positive.
Well, I mean, Mark, there's no doubt it's been a disaster, but I think a lot of the anger and frustration kind of clouds your vision or your view. And there's no doubt the season's been a disaster because of the insane amount of injuries. To have Markkanen start the season injured, who's arguably our best player, and to expect him just suddenly come back and to be on all cylinders is so insanely dumb. And you know, I think even I fell for it to a certain degree when, you know, it took him a while to kind of get going. But you're seeing exactly what we expect, what I expected. What I think he's surpassing expectations right now over in the month of February. The team's number one offense in February. And it's incredible to go from where we were to the number one offense, better in Golden State in the month of February in terms of offensive efficiency. It's insane.
And with that bench too, with that horrific bench.
Yeah, and on top of that, like, you know, Valentine, I know everybody makes jokes about it. He was our best 3-point shooter. What's a big problem with this team? No 3-point shooting. Hutch actually started showing signs, injury. Wendell Carter Jr. showing signs, injury. You know, that's the biggest issue that I don't think anyone's talking about. It's not just the sheer amount of injuries. It's the injury timing where these guys have not had the chance to gel and play together. Even Wendell Carter Jr., everybody's talking about how bad we've been defensively this month. He's our best defensive player. Is there anybody wants to debate that? He's a fantastic rim defender, and he's 19 years old. And if he was healthy, he'd be learning how to play with these guys. And I really think things would be even looking better than they already are. You know, just getting Porter, it was so huge, no doubt about it. I mean, he's one of those guys that just makes everyone else around him better with his shooting ability. He's hit so many needs for this team in just one body. He needed better defender, got it with him. Better shooting, got it with him. Better length, better athleticism, just a smart player who spreads the floor for other guys. He's exponentially better than the garbage we had with Holiday, you know, and really no other threes with Valentine being hurt. So, yeah, it's looking better, no doubt about it, you know, and it will continue to be better as these guys get healthy and, more importantly, learn how to play with each other.
I'd like to add to the Otto Porter remarks that you were making there in the sense that Bulls have been getting killed for admitting that they weren't going to be a player for KD or Kawhi, and I don't think that's the right approach to take to the decision that they tried to make. They were realistic with themselves for where they are and what they were going to be able to get, and what they were going to be able to get, best case scenario, was probably Middleton or Tobias Harris on a max contract that would be longer than 2 years. Otto Porter's contract lines up perfectly with Lauri Markkanen's rookie contract.
Yes.
It comes off the books the year that Lauri needs to be paid or that his extension will go into effect. So when Pack says that Otto Porter is on the timeline, he is. I did the math the other day. Between Zach, Otto, Lauri, and Wendell, they're making under $50 million for those four starters through Lowry's rookie contract and Otto Porter's contract. That gives you $50 million in cap space with your rookie addition that you're adding this year to put good pieces around these young players and take advantage of that, you know, salary situation. So I don't think that the front office blows as much smoke as people say that they do. I think that the times that they are kind of just lying blatantly to your face just makes it hard for people to listen to what they say. But they're not lying here.
Well, yeah, I also think that they're getting shot a lot of crap for the fact that what does this do to our chances of getting the top pick? And the fact is that even if we had the worst record in the NBA, our chance of getting the top pick, that is only 14%. Us being where we are right now, which it looks like, unless something changes, we're pretty firmly in that four spot, is 12.5%. To lose that 1.5% chance to get a player that fits your rotation for the next two seasons, dramatically upgrades you defensively, adds that perimeter shooting that you need, a guy who can score the basketball, a guy who is going to be a piece of this team, is worth that percentage and a half that we lose in getting the number one draft pick.
Absolutely. And then when the fact of the matter is, regardless, the other last point that they're getting hammered on is Robin Lopez. We got to buy out Robin Lopez. I posted this poll. Does Robin Lopez help or hinder the development of Lauri Markkanen? And the answer is, with unequivocally, it helps his development. So if that's a goal, then I'd consider, I'd really think twice before you just buy him out. Because he clearly makes Lauri Markkanen better. He does a lot of those things. And it's easy. I know Sylvie would argue, come back to me and say, well, if he needs Robin Lopez, then he's not going to be as great as we all think he is. It's easy to say that, but
ridiculous.
He's 21 years old. He's 21 years old. You're still learning the game. If you really want to help him, I think it is beneficial to have a guy, a pro's pro like Robin Lopez next to you, doing all the little dirty work, rebounding, sending good picks, and helping you learn the game and become better. Then having Cristiano Felicio, who's just a complete train wreck, and then you're getting all the nonsense because he can't do anything on the court. So, just my opinion, but I know I may be wrong there, but I don't think
you're wrong there. He is clearly helping Lowry's development. A lot of the rebounds that Lowry gets is because Robin Lopez is so good at boxing out down low that he just does that, similar to Steven Adams, to let somebody who's good in transition get the ball. It's just quicker than him grabbing it and tossing it, and then you have that half second in between. And Will Perdue, on the last NBCS Bulls Talk podcast that they did, kind of gave away some information that Rolo wants to stay here.
I love that. I heard that too, yeah.
So if Rolo, had some discontent towards the Bulls for forcing him to play out his contract here, I could understand why you'd be looking into buying him out. But if I think Rolo's a piece worth retaining, I'd like to see him continue to grow with this core. If you buy him out, the chances of that happening are less likely. So I think it's a very smart play to keep him as long as he's saying that he would like to be here long term.
And I also feel like this team would be just god-awful without him. And the fact is that at this point, I think we're pretty firmly in, and things can change, but I think we're pretty firmly in the spot of having the fourth worst record. What's so bad with us winning from time to time and not making these guys have just zero confidence when they go out there? I do think that it's important for this team to feel at the end of the season like they were on an upswing and that things were starting to look good. And the fact that you had all these injuries and all these things work against them, that at the end you saw the glimmer that there is something positive coming. Because if this season was just a train wreck and it just ends as a complete train wreck, what are these guys think coming into this next season? Why would they believe that the pieces that we have are worth fighting for and thinking that they potentially can win? We need them to feel going into next year that they can win, and I think it starts now.
Well said, partner. I couldn't put it any better. That was an absolute home run statement, and I agree. I think they need to be on the feeling that they're on the upswing. And it doesn't help to be on the upswing when you got Felicio starting games and you're losing, on a 10-game losing streak, right? I understand, 1.4, 1.5, I understand that. I feel I'd rather be 12.5 than 14% if we're on the upswing. So on that note, gentlemen, great job. Thank you for jumping on, and looking forward to talking to you again soon. Until next time, Mark, if it ain't Bulls.
It ain't basketball.
All right, brother. Hey, good talking to you, Keith. Have a good one, guys. Great stuff.
Take it easy.
All right,
bye-bye.